sorry, the next few days, so what the various lectures will be about, and then we'll do the first one. I am going to be prodded about halfway through to stop talking. Okay, so yes, yeah, so I work at Battersby University in the UK. So this is sort of where I work. It's very English. It's about as English as you could possibly get as a university. And I kind of head up the research centre. I was asked by my boss when he kind of heard that I was going to teach over here to promote our research centre. So I have to sort of do an obligatory point out to the Media Futures Research Centre, which is kind of the centre for all of the research that we do to do with media, to do with film, to do with television at Battersby. My research is, yes, it is about transmedia or transmediality. But that's really something, a smaller area sort of what I do. I'm interested in media industries, thinking about them globally. So how do they actually operate? What do they do behind the scenes? Who makes the media? How do they produce it? How do they distribute it? How do they advertise it? How do they influence how we consume media? And really trying to understand that on a sort of industrial, global scale. Doing that has sort of meant that I've kind of focused into transmedia, so looking at how things move across borders, and particularly the historical aspect of this. This isn't what I'm going to talk about today, but I am going to be doing this in a number of lectures. I've also got a big interest in branding, so looking at how media actually becomes a product, how do they package it, how do they design what the logo is, how do they decide who the audience is, how do they put that online, how do they package it, how do they promote it. And indeed, thinking about this as part of a cultural process. So how do we, as audiences, engage with media products? How do we decide that we're going to watch this film rather than that film? Is it just to do with the trailer? Is it to do with the packaging? Is it to do with the director? And really kind of looking at this across historical and contemporary contexts. So that's kind of me, if you like. So in terms of this course, in terms of the reason why I think it's really, really important, and hopefully you will agree it's quite important by the fact that you're sitting here, is this idea that we are now living in a transmedia age, if you like. It's the fact that we don't even think about it anymore, but films aren't films anymore. They're films and they become other things. They become websites, and then they might become a television series, and they might then become a comic book, or they might then emerge on social media. And we don't even think about that, but that is in itself interesting. It says something about media culture and how it spreads and how we as audiences move across different platforms. And in a way, this is always something I thought was really sort of interesting about universities, is that as academics, we're trained to look at certain things. We say we study films, or we study culture, or we study history, or we study politics, or we study digital media. And actually the media landscape doesn't work like that, and it's not worked like that for a long time. As audiences, we are trained and instinctively know how to move across different platforms. So we need to understand that. We need to understand how that actually happens. How does media cross borders, and what are the implications of it moving across borders? So that's sort of the context, if you like. So in terms of sort of what we're going to do, in terms of kind of the rationale behind all of this, as I said, it's trying to understand how media moves across borders and what happens when that happens, who decides who's going to do this, what are the industrial strategies that enable it to happen, culturally what happens as a result, as audiences, how do we know how to move across different platforms, and how does it impact the text, the film, what happens to the story when this suddenly moves across borders. So we need to understand the concepts behind it, the practices behind it, the models behind this idea of transmedia or transmedia storytelling, as I'm going to focus on. We need to think about this culturally, industrially, in terms of audiences, but also textually. And this means looking at lots of different things. It means going outside of film studies. It means thinking about globalization. It means thinking about promotion. It means thinking about branding. It means thinking about various sort of things that might be happening socially, okay? Things like the role of technology, things like how we participate with media, the role of digital media, for example. And as Sharky said, what I'm going to do is sort of structure this around past, present, and the future. So I'm going to start today with a very sort of general introduction in terms of transmediality. Then we're going to kind of go back and we're going to look at it in various, various different contexts and cultures. hopefully kind of what you'll get out of this, and I'm trying to write this as sort of simply as I kind of possibly can, is thinking about transmedia as a concept and what are the characteristics of it. So rather than just taking it for granted that media moves across borders, let's really try and dig deep. What does it look like when it moves across borders? What are the characteristics of it? And if we can understand that, then we can really sort of understand what changes when media moves across borders. But more broadly, I'm kind of interested in the cultures and the industries behind it. So what's the value of transmedia? Why do the industries actually do it? What are the problems that might emerge in doing it? What are its different functions, both historically and in a contemporary context? And some of those might surprise you, actually. You might think, well, you know, transmedia makes money. But it actually does a hell of a lot more than that, and it's the different functions that we're going to look at. And then thinking about this in terms of analysis as well. So, you know, do particular genres work well as transmedia? And as I said, what sort of changes, what's the implication economically, textually, culturally, audience-based, etc.? So first lecture, as I said, it's the introduction. This actually is the lecture that's going to have the least amount of me in it, in terms of my own research, and that's very deliberate. It's very much to give you a general introduction. What is transmediality? How has it been defined? What have other scholars said about it previously? We need to know that before then we can look at it in different sort of contexts. The second one will be based on what I consider to be what I've called the kind of the concepts or the conceptions of transmedia. So the things that underpin it, if you like, whether that's textually or whether it's extra textually, things like promotion and brand. What are the functions? What does it actually look like? Following on from that, we're then going to go back in time. So we're going to look at transmedia as a historical practice. How did it emerge 100 years ago? What needed to happen in order for transmedia to emerge? Then we're going to go a little bit further forward, but still 20th century, so looking at how Hollywood eventually kind of discovered transmedia and really kind of monopolised it as a sort of blockbuster or commercial phenomenon. And we'll have a screening that's attached to that one. And then on the last day, it's kind of going to be looking forward. So looking firstly at the digital, so what does transmedia mean in terms of social media and digital media and audiences and how we interact with different media platforms? And then the third one is thinking globally. So a lot of what I'm going to talk about is US/UK based. In the last one, we're going to go much, much further afield, looking at what it means in, say, Colombia, what it means in different European countries, what are the different functions that transmedia might have that maybe we've not really thought about. So that's what we're going to do. So first one, as I said, this is the general one. This is the introductory insight outline. What is transmediality? How has it been defined academically? I should say as a disclaimer, I actually disagree with a lot of these kind of things. And what you'll see over the next few days is me kind of tearing this apart slightly and thinking, well, actually, he said this, but shouldn't we think about this? Or shouldn't we look at this? But before we do that, as I said, we need to have a general introduction. Okay, so what I'm going to do is obviously definitions. So what actually is it? What is transmediality or transmedia storytelling? How have academics thought about this in terms of context? So where have academics looked to understand why transmediality has emerged? And what I'm going to do then is sort of do a very kind of general insight into how it's important to think about transmedia in terms of audience and how maybe different parts of different transmedia stories maybe are aimed to different audiences, maybe they appeal to different people in different cultures, maybe that depends on the country that you're living in, maybe it depends on the genre, just really to give you a general insight into what it means for stories to move across platforms and what the sort of critical implications of all of that might be. And then lastly, a few pointers in terms of what academics have said that transmedia looks like, okay? Again, I don't necessarily agree with all of them, but it is important to look at this. Okay, so what is it? I think this is probably the most useful definition. So this is Elizabeth Evans, who's a UK scholar. And she talks about this idea of transmediality, okay? So the first thing to note is that actually transmedia is an adjective rather than a noun. So it's usually transmedia something, Yeah, transmedia is storytelling, transmedia distribution, transmedia production, transmedia branding, and so on. So transmediality is the umbrella term for all of this. It's the big concept that just thinks about media across borders. And in its simplest sense, that's what it is. Media across borders. That being said, academics have had a tendency to narrow this down a little bit. So thinking about, yes, media across borders, but narrowing it down slightly into what's usually talked about as fiction. So it's usually talked about as a way of storytelling or of filmmaking quite often. And in this case, particularly thinking about fictional worlds and how maybe we can, or filmmakers or media makers can disperse media across different platforms. No sense of why they're doing it yet, but this is the general idea. Media, maybe storytelling, across borders. Henry Jenkins, probably the most famous definition, talks about transmedia storytelling. So a slightly more specific thing, but there's not much difference in terms of the definitions here. And he's really interested in Hollywood. He's really interested in filmmaking. And he, when he wrote his book, what, 10 years ago now, thought that there was a big change in Hollywood. He thought something was happening around the mid-2000s that wasn't really happening before, and that was that stories were being told across media. So it wasn't just about film. The film was something, but it was part of something else. And the storytelling, the experience, was actually moving far outside of the cinema into something else. So he coined this idea of transmedia storytelling, okay? Where, as you can see, it's the idea that stories unfold across media platforms. And each medium has a role to play. Each one has a function in terms of telling a particular piece of that particular story. Okay? And he kind of, you know, he's using words like franchise, so he's clearly talking about Hollywood and blockbusters and expensive productions. And he's kind of implying that this is quite new and that this is somehow better than other commercial franchise productions. So things like merchandise, for example. This is something new. This is something better in some way. I don't necessarily agree, but this was the understanding. And the example that he pointed to was The Matrix, particularly The Matrix sequel. So this was around 2003. He looked at this and he thought, well, this is really, really interesting because when you watch The Matrix films, they're fine, the Matrix films are fine, and there's a sequel, and there's another sequel. But actually, it's really interesting, because there's all this other stuff. There's the games, and there's multiple games, and there's comics, and there's DVDs that are all kind of released at exactly the same time. And he thought, well, this is really interesting, because it's not just a spin-off, as he put it. It's not just, here's a game based on a film. This is actually, the story is somehow being told throughout all of these different media platform. So the story starts in the film and then it continues over into the game, and then there's a subplot in the game that moves over back into the film, and then the film tells you about a character who's in the DVD, so you have to go and buy the DVD to learn about that particular character. So it's this idea of connected storytelling. All these different pieces of plots and characters somehow being interwoven together, like a canvas in some ways. So this was him sort of talking about it. And he thought, okay, what is going on here? Well, it's a process. It's a process where stories are being dispersed, as he calls it, systematically, that creates this really coordinated entertainment experience. Somebody has really thought this through. They've sat down. There's this story with this character and this subplot and this particular story, and we're going to put that one in the game, that one in the film, that one in the sequel, that one in the comic book. And they're all going to interweave in a really clever way, and it's going to enrich the entertainment experience, because there's so much more as audiences to learn about this story. It doesn't stop with the film. And what this meant for him is that you can't possibly understand everything there is to know about, in this case, The Matrix, unless you go and consume all of these other things. If you just watch the film, he says, you don't really understand what's going on. It's part of a puzzle, and the rest of the puzzle is somewhere else. So if you want to understand The Matrix, you have to move across platforms. And I'm just going to show you a couple of videos about this. So this is a sort of behind the scenes video in terms of The Matrix and the game. And you can kind of, when you watch it, you'll see what's being emphasized. The producers and the writers and the actors are talking about this particular game as if it's doing something that's never been done before. Okay?
Wachowski brothers felt that there should be a Matrix video game from the very beginning. They wanted to make the video game directly related to the movie.
Aesthetics, Captain Hill Science. We're going to attempt an emergency broadcast drop in the Matrix. All we can do is hope.
Sparks, I want the ship's guns online right now.
In the video game, there's certain information from the film trailer that you don't get from the movie.
Orpheus is on the freeway just ahead of you.
You get to see these other characters and how they interact and who they are through the video game. That's really one of the things.
First mention of the video game was that it was like a third movie. And it had this whole amazing, intricate story weaved into the stories in the movies.
Operator.
Get me out of here, Sparks.
Oh, I can't watch this. You've basically taken Reloaded and expanded it out into two parallel stories, not just the film, not just the game. You're actually fully connected in every way.
Uh-oh, heads up, guys. Head cut.
In the video game, we would perform a mission, and at the end of the mission, we walk right into movie footage. That movie footage would run directly with what just happened in Reloaded.
Damn, not who I was hoping for.
So instead of doing a parallel universe where you just basically see exactly the action that takes place in the film in the game, you get to see everything that doesn't take place in the movie in the game.
The Matrix is written by the boys, directed by the boys, cut by the boys. So they're actually directly involved in the making of the video game, which was their idea from the beginning, which has never been done before.
You have to make me believe.
Okay, so you can see what's sort of being emphasized here, okay? This is a third movie. It's not a video game. It's a third movie. It's got the same actors as in the films. It's written and directed by the same writer-directors of the films, and the story is all weaving through. So what you don't get in the film, you get in the game. If you want to understand the film, you have to go over to the game. So this was seen as this kind of very sort of new, clever, integrated, connected storytelling strategy. Soon, industry started to think, actually, this we could use this in some way. I'm just going to... This is a very short... industry video by a company called Starlight Runner Entertainment, who are a transmedia production company. And this is them, in simple, plain English, explaining what transmedia is and why we should all care about. This isn't about the Matrix, this is why we should all care about transmedia.
Transmedia storytelling is the art of conveying messages, themes, or storylines to a mass audience through the artful and well-planned use of multiple media platforms. Your movie, television show, video game, or novel has a rich story and immersive world, but how do you maximize its value? You have a new product or brand, but how do you engage consumers in a way that intrigues, educates, and builds fantastic loyalty? It all starts with story. But in today's interconnected world, the story has the potential to start in one medium and flow into another. Bulletins about the approach of a mysterious sea creature are found throughout the internet months before the release of Cloverfield. A new generation of Star Wars fans, hungry for clues about their favorite Clone Wars cartoon characters, thrilled to the discovery of their fates while watching the original trilogies. Girls who adore the Tinkerbell DVD can then follow their favorite characters after journeying into the wider world of the Disney Fairies novels. Most of us flow naturally from one medium to the next. Unfortunately, most of our content doesn't. Instead, the stories are repurposed and repeated. They do not expand the franchise, nor do they build brand equity. With transmedia, each part of the story is unique and plays to the strengths of the medium. The result is a new kind of narrative where story flows across each platform, forming a rich narrative tapestry that manifests in an array of products and multiple revenue streams. The audience is both validated and celebrated for participating in the story world through the medium of their choice.
Okay, so very quite compelling. Okay, transmedia is new, apparently. It enables a story which is richer, which is fuller, which gives you as an audience more to do because you hunt down pieces of extra information so you feel quite active whilst you're engaging with particular media. It makes more money for industry. The storytelling is far superior in every possible way. This is kind of the idea, okay? So, it's kind of useful. Obviously, what's kind of being talked about here, the Matrix one, it was, this has never been done before. That video is, this is a new type of storytelling. It's useful to think about, why do people think it's new? So what sort of happened contextually that enables this idea of connected stories, heightened engagement? How does this actually happen? So the idea, in terms of what a number of academics have said, is that underpinning everything to do with transmedia is this idea of convergence, or convergence culture, more specifically. So it's the idea that something's happened in, say, the last 2 to 3 decades that enables stories to be told across platforms in a way that perhaps they couldn't be told in that way in the past. Now, I don't agree with that at all. But what I would say is that this context of convergence certainly enables, it makes it easier for stories to move across platforms. And the reason is two things. So the first is what's called industrial convergence. So this is the idea that big multinational, mainly American corporations around 1980s got bigger and they converged and they bought more and more companies. So they start to look like this. So rather than, say, having one company there and one company there and one over here and one over here, suddenly they all start to be connected. So Disney buys ABC Television, for example, and ABC owns a number of corporations. If you take, you know, Time Warner as an example, they are a film company, they are Warner Brothers, but they also own DC Comics, they also own a number of book outlets, they also own a number of websites, and so on and so forth. So the idea being, very logically, that if these companies own all of these different media corporations, it means that they have the power and the right to spread their stories across them far, far easily. There's no borders anymore. Everything's kind of connected in terms of ownership. So the Matrix, of course, can therefore be spread across different platforms. The other sort of idea underpinning this is technological convergence, or digital convergence. So the idea, again, connections. Different media platforms used to be separate, right? So you used to have a mobile phone, and then you had a television. Now you watch television on your mobile phone. So it's, again, it's convergence. And what that means is, if the different media platforms are now on exactly the same device, it means that those things can be spread across. Okay, so convergence very much sort of underpinning this idea. So in an industrial sense, it's this. It's the fact that, you know, companies have all of these different companies and corporations and platforms at their disposal, hence why we get things like this. So whoever produces Avatar, 20th Century Fox, are owned by a bigger company who own other companies, who own toy divisions, who own magazines, so on and so forth. Avatar can then very, very easily become that rather than just a film. The digital side of this, so BBC, for example, used to be television and radio. Now the television and radio is exactly the same thing. You can go online and the radio and the TV are exactly there. They're presented in the same way. You can click exactly the same button. So what this means is there really, there's much less difference between what we used to think of as television and radio. They're on the same screen. You consume them in exactly the same way, at exactly the same time. So that means that something, say, like British television, BBC programmes such as Doctor Who, becomes online and it becomes digitally and it can become extended across platforms. So as well as the TV series and, say, DVDs, we now have online episodes which you can watch online through iPlayer, for example. You have a number of mini-series where you can follow the stories not told on the television series, and you do this online. Okay. There is also audiobooks, so radio-based, for example. So that's all fine. This is kind of the context for sort of why transmedia is seen to have emerged. I think this kind of raises questions. Okay. So the first is, well, why do they do this? What's the point in them actually doing this? Why can't Avatar just be a film? Why does it have to be all these other things? Why can't The Matrix just be a film? Why does it have to be a comic book? And this is interesting, I think, in terms of audience. And these are questions that we're kind of going to come back to, okay? But it's, well, is it about re-engaging the same person? So is it about saying, okay, we know that this people over here like the film, so we're going to give them a comic book so that they keep on consuming The Matrix. So it's about engaging the same people over and over again. Or is it not that? Actually, maybe is it about finding a different audience? So is it about using The Matrix as a kind of intellectual property, and using the film to appeal to these guys over there, and then using the comic to appeal to those guys over there, the types of people that maybe wouldn't necessarily cross over. So the types of people who don't buy comic books, for example, but watch films, maybe it's a way to appeal to two different audiences. I don't necessarily think it's one or the other, and this is, I think, what's interesting about transmedia. I think it's both, and I think it changes at different times, depending on what the story is or who's actually produced it. You can think about this globally as well. You can think, well, actually, is the reason that, say, The Matrix looks like this or Avatar looks like this, it's to appeal to different countries? So maybe the film's going to appeal in that country, and then everything else, the comics, the games and so on, are going to appeal to a totally different country. Now, Jenkins would argue that's not the point at all. He talks about it, as we saw, stories unfolding across platforms. So it's encouraging the audience to move across. What I kind of want to point you to now is actually an example where it's not necessarily that simple, and it's not about the audience moving across, but transmedia is about finding a different audience. And actually, Avatar is a really good example of this, okay? So Avatar is, I think, still the highest grossing film of all time. I've never met anybody who liked it, but it's still the highest grossing film of all time. What's interesting is you might look at this and think, well, this is Hollywood through and through, right? This has to be Hollywood through and through. It's Avatar. It's produced by 20th Century Fox, Hollywood. It looks like a blockbuster. It is a blockbuster. There's a lot of American actors in there. It tells a very blockbuster-style story. There's lots of special effects and action sequences and so on and so forth. What's quite interesting is that in terms of how much money it made, so that no film has ever made that amount before or since, the vast majority of the money doesn't come from America, okay? This is quite unusual. Certain blockbusters are very usually US top-heavy in terms of how much money they make. Wasn't the case with Avatar. Most of the money, 72%, actually came from outside America. American audiences, if you actually do some research into this, weren't that keen on Avatar. Avatar as a huge global success was because of a global audience. Okay, what I'm just going to quickly do is show you the trailer for Avatar. And while you're watching it, just have a think. What in this film or in this trailer do you think maybe is appealing to an American audience and what isn't? What's maybe appealing to a European audience or a global audience? Is there two different audiences here? How can we understand the split?
You Jake Sully? I'd like to talk to you about a fresh start on a new world. You'll be making a difference. I became a Marine for the hardship. I told myself I could pass any test a man can pass. All I ever wanted was a single thing worth fighting for.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're not in Kansas anymore. You're on Pandora.
You should see your faces.
We have an indigenous population called the Na'vi. They are very hard to kill.
This is why we're here. Because this little gray rock sells for 20 million a kilo. Their village happens to be resting on the richest deposit, and they need to relocate. Those savages are threatening our whole operation. We're on the brink of war, and you're supposed to be finding a diplomatic solution.
The concept is to drive these remotely controlled bodies called avatars. They're grown from human DNA mixed with DNA of the natives.
Marine in an avatar body. That's a potent mix.
You get me what I mean? I'll see to it you get your legs, babe. Your real legs.
Oh, yeah, sir.
Looks like you. This is your avatar.
Just relax and let your mind go blank. It shouldn't be hard for you.
Jake, it's real simple.
I want you to learn from the inside. I want you to gain their trust.
This is your fault.
I need your help. Outstanding.
Haven't gotten lost in the woods, have you?
You forget what team you're playing for?
Strong, prey on the weak. Nobody does a thing.
You've got 1 hour.
You know this would happen?
Crazy here. Horrocks is rolling and there's no stopping him.
We're going up against gunships with bows and arrows.
Well, I guess we better stop him.
They've sent us a message that they can take whatever they want. But we will send them a message. That this is overland!
Okay. Right. Trailer's better than the film, isn't it? Okay, so I think the reason why this kind of works as a trailer in terms of global audiences, there's clearly things in here that by definition, in terms of stereotypes, you would think are going to appeal to Americans, okay? So it looks like a sort of war film. It looks very kind of American, very patriotic. Obviously, there are lots of American actors. They're emphasizing the fact that it's directed by James Cameron, very renowned Hollywood director behind The Terminator and Titanic, and so on and so forth. But equally, there seems to be this other stuff that seems to be more important in terms of what they want you to know. They want you to know it's a love story. So it's not actually a war film. It's a love story. They want you to know actually it's kind of anti-war in that there may be all these action sequences that are warlike and that are spectacular. But actually the message is that this is bad. That this is somehow an anti-war film. Okay, despite all these very sort of big patriotic kind of ideas. Also, they want you to know that this is beautiful, right? As a thing to look at, it is absolutely spectacular. It looks amazing. There's this amazing world that you've never, ever seen before. That's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen in your life. They want you to know that this is also about kind of aliens or characters that are not necessarily human, okay? And the reason behind all of this is that this stuff is global, okay? Love stories are fundamentally global. Everybody can resonate with a love story in a way that perhaps they can't resonate with a war story. Everyone can get behind an anti-war story, perhaps more than they can a war story. Also, everyone kind of empathise with these sort of weird blue-like alien characters, right? There's a reason why Disney films tell stories about talking animals, because everybody can empathise with an animal, okay? This isn't specific to any particular country. This isn't just American people. These are aliens. So they're not specific to any country or any particular culture. So as a general global audience, we can all kind of understand what's going on. We're not going to be leaning towards any group of people. It's all about love and it's all about heroism. And it's all about anti-war and it's all about saving the planet. As a story and as themes and as characters, it seems like, okay, this is why the global audience got behind this. We can kind of understand it, okay? What's interesting is that the transmedia stuff isn't necessarily the same, okay? Jenkins would say it is. You know, if you look at the Matrix example, it's, well, the film is exactly like the game, exactly the same actors, the same directors, the same themes, the plot crossover, and clearly this is about encouraging that audience to move across. But just as a quick example, I want to show actually it's not always like that, okay? So Avatar the game, okay, this is transmedia, it's the film that turns into a game. It was released roughly around the same kind of period. You would think that the game would be exactly like the film. It's appealing to the same audience, a global audience, okay? I'm just going to very quickly show you the trailer for the game, okay? And when you watch this, just think what's different. What's different about the trailer for the game in terms of what they're telling you, what it looks like, what they want you to know, And how is that different to the film? And do you think the audience is the same based on that? Right, how ominous is that, okay? As a piece of media, as a trailer, how ominous? It seems very, very different, doesn't it, from the film was very hopeful, optimistic, it's all about love, it's all about romance, it's all about anti-war, it's about saving the planet. This is, the tagline is quite literally, ignite the war. It's, let's kill everyone, okay? The beauty seems to have disappeared. It seems very low-key and muted in terms of colour palette. They seem to have missed the point in terms of the war, whereas in the film, it's, okay, war's bad. Here is it. Let's ignite the war. Let's start a war. Let's kill everybody. Let's blow everything up because it's going to be fun, right? Very, very different, okay? And it may or may not surprise you as a result of that, that the audience for the film and the game, in terms of national countries, isn't the same, okay? The game was much more a US selling product in a way that, say, the film wasn't. In a way we can kind of understand, because the film is quite anti-American, actually. Whereas the game seems to be very war-orientated, very sort of masculine, very kind of dark, okay? Very much kind of rooted to a video game playing audience. You know, we can kind of understand love stories aren't really going to work in a game, but they're going to work in a film. So in comparison, the sales figures were kind of exactly the opposite, whereas the US audiences weren't really that interested in the film, and the global audience was, the game it was exactly the opposite. Nobody really cared about following the story of Avatar outside of the film. It seemed a cinematic story for whatever reason. But gamers, particularly in America, seemed to go for this, okay? So the point here is, it seems an obvious point, but it's an important point. Transmedia is complicated, okay? It is about storytelling. It is about building, in this case, fantasy worlds across different platforms. But sometimes this is about encouraging an audience to move across. And in the different lectures, we're going to kind of look at examples of when this happens. Whereas in other instances, actually, it's about targeting different audiences in different cultures at different times in very different contexts and using the different affordances of media platforms and what they can do and what they can't do in order to appeal to these kind of audiences. So understanding how this happens and why this happens and what the implications of this happening are very complicated, okay? And it takes a lot of analysis to understand why this might actually be, what this might happen. Last thing before we have a sort of quick break. it raises questions. And obviously, these are big sort of generalizations, and I'm not saying this is a true, but in terms of us as researchers, it says something about different media platforms, okay, and what different audiences do and how they move across platforms and when they move across platforms. It definitely, I think, that perhaps isn't so much a question mark. It seems that transmedia, and this is kind of the early conclusion, if you like, it's key to engaging wider audiences. It's really important for finding an audience and keeping an audience engaged in a way that perhaps they wouldn't be if it was just in one platform. So no matter how good your story is as a film, once that film's over, it's over. So transmedia is a really important way to engage an audience, keep them engaged, and maybe even find different audiences. But obviously it raises other sorts of questions as well that very much are kind of questions. So based on this example, can we say that games are somehow less global than films? Well, not really, but this kind of example suggests that it might be. So that's going to have certain kind of cultural implications. Does it mean that US audiences are drawn to video games in a way that, say, European audiences aren't? We'd have to research that, but it seems to be an early kind of implication. Science fiction film seems to be a global thing. If you look at kind of all the highest grossing films of all time, the vast majority of them do seem to be fantasy science fiction. So does that mean that these types of stories are innately suitable for transmedia? Because they appeal to basically everybody, regardless of what country you're in. Does it mean that, you know, if you are sort of a non-Western audience, you prefer somehow watching spectacle and watching imaginary worlds to actually playing in them? Maybe there's a cultural reason for that, but obviously filmmakers and media makers have to think about these cultural implications. Is this story going to appeal to that audience? Is it going to appeal to this particular culture or this particular country? And it means in terms of the stories that do fundamentally work well across media, they tend to be about certain things if you look at them. Love stories move across platforms, and they move across countries, and they move across cultures. Things about war or anti-war, in this case kind of colonization, there's something about them that we all sort of instinctively empathize with and instinctively understand that make them quite suitable for moving across cultures, moving across media, moving across maybe even different countries in a way that something that's more niche perhaps wouldn't, okay? So just some early kind of questions, if you like, in terms of thinking about what transmedia is and what it does and what it's for and the problems that might emerge. Okay, let's have a quick 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you need to, would you like me to bring you some water?
Yes, that would